I've been invited this evening to speak under the series title Past Tense, Future Perfect, Learning from the History of Faith. Because it's almost, in Cambridge terms at least, Easter, I thought I'd take this opportunity to speak about a poet and a poem who exemplify a different sense of that past tense, the tension of the past imperfect. John Donne gives us error and struggle, not the certainties of a fixed belief. His faith is an intelligent bargaining, and that makes him a surprisingly modern figure. John Donne, poet and preacher, is axiomatically flawed, a man of conversions and reversals, constantly lamenting his own inconstancy. He was born in 1572 into a Catholic family with a history of recusancy, but converted to Protestantism at some point in his 20s, possibly to help him build a career as a courtier. In this period, the late 1590s, Donne was a man about town, a lawyer, a poet, and a flirt. He was also determined to succeed in public office, and in 1597 went to work for a powerful courtier, Thomas Egerton. In 1601, he eloped with Egerton's 16-year-old niece, Anne More. He was dismissed in disgrace and imprisoned at the request of her father. His public career never recovered. Donne spent the next 15 years in penury and ignominy, looking for patronage and begging favours and money wherever he could. King James believed his past errors disqualified him from public employment and would only support him if he went into the church. So in 1615, at the age of 43, Donne bowed to the inevitable and took holy orders, though he resisted almost to the last. He became the most famous preacher of his day. The poem I want to talk about dates from a couple of years before this ordination. It's called Good Friday, 1613, Riding Westward, so we're coming up to the 410th anniversary of its composition. Donne had been visiting a friend, but was called away on some unspecified business. This poem was the result. Good Friday is in many ways a puzzling piece, partly because the title suggests something temporally or topographically grounded, but instead we get a visionary, supernatural rumination on the nature of faith itself. And where you might expect logical argument and scrupulous self-positioning, you find a winning and witty admission of frailty. Good Friday is a poem about two ways of looking, about being drawn forward and glancing back. Here is the first section, which is printed in your orders of service as well, where Donne establishes his method and argument. Let man's soul be a sphere, and then in this the intelligence that moves devotion is. And as the other spheres, by being grown subject to foreign motion, lose their own, and being by others hurried every day, scarce in a year their natural form obey, pleasure or business so our souls admit for their first mover and a world by it. Hence is it that I am carried towards the west this day, when my soul's form bends toward the east. There I should see a sun by rising set, and by that setting endless day beget. But that Christ on this cross did rise and fall, sin had eternally benighted all. It opens with what sounds like an analogical proposition. Let man's soul be a sphere. Donne likens his soul to a planet that wants to trace the path of its own right orbit, east, in devotional reverence, but is instead drawn off course by two bigger planets, pleasure or business. They exert a stronger gravitational pull than devotion, so here he is, travelling in the opposite direction. His excuse for missing the Good Friday service is oddly unspecific, pleasure or business, and these are hardly equal kinds of reasons to skip church. If he were facing east in worship, Donne says, he'd be thinking about Christ's sacrifice on the cross, something he imagines with a witty extension of these planetary thoughts. Christ the Son, that is, the Son of God, but also equivalent to the sun that rises in the sky, by rising set, in ascending the cross, died. And if he hadn't, the planetary sun's course would have been halted in the fall of an eternal night. This is almost conventional, but what follows certainly is not. Donne started off by saying his soul bent towards Christ, towards the east, but now it seems he's changed his mind. Yet dare I almost be glad I do not see that spectacle of too much weight for me. Who sees God's face that is self-life must die. What a death were it then to see God die. It made his own lieutenant nature shrink. It made his footstool crack and the sun wink. Could I behold those hands which span the poles and tune all spheres at once pierced with those holes? could I behold that endless height which is zenith to us and our antipodes humbled below us, or that blood which is the seat of all our souls, if not of his, make dirt of dust. The abstract and academical musings have given way to a vivid and fearsome imagining. 17th century England collapses into 1st century Jerusalem, and a great crucifix looms up and dominates the landscape of the verse, but only for us. Donne, remember, is still facing the other way. This sky-filling image is at his back, in memory and imagination. The site of the crucified Christ that Donne rides from is described in terms of its seismic physical effects. Nature shrinks, the earth cracks, the sun is extinguished. How can poor Donne, then, be expected to confront it? He turns next to vivid paradoxes, the all-powerful God humbled. He struggles here to reconcile the human with the divine. The spiritual and physical have nothing to mediate between them. Hands which span poles literally encircle the earth, are pierced with holes. The staggering extent of Christ, here magnified a thousandfold from zenith to antipodes, is contracted into the measure of a racked human body. For me, the most startling image here is the blood which makes dirt of dust. If he were where he was supposed to be, in church, Donne would be taking communion. Instead of that precious, infinite, regenerating wine-turned blood of the Eucharist, we have an unpleasant historical mess. Involuntary blood patters on unfeeling ground and turns the dry dust to mud. This is too much for Donne. I durst not look. In the last part of the poem, Donne tries to extract himself and excuse himself. Though these things as I ride be from mine eye, they are present yet unto my memory, for that looks towards them, and thou looks towards me, O Saviour, as thou hangst upon the tree. I turn my back to thee but to receive corrections till thy mercies bid thee leave. O think me worth thine anger, punish me, burn off my rusts and my deformity, restore thine image so much by thy grace that thou mayest know me, and I'll turn my face. Here is the Janus-faced poet. His will rides forward as his memory reaches back. But even though that massive, lowering Christ looks fixedly towards him, he will not, cannot turn. Instead, he argues. It might look bad riding away from church and from Christ on this day, but it's not what it seems. Donne has his back to Christ so he can be whipped as he deserves. What looks like a devotional failure is actually more humble, more faithful than if he was facing the right way. But Donne has already admitted in the first few lines of the poem that his reasons for turning his back are nothing to do with feelings of unworthiness or humility. Pleasure or business prompts his journey on this day of devotion, and weakness keeps his focus to the front. I durst not look. To recast this attitude as one of penitent submission is at best sophistical, at worst knowingly self-serving. If it fools us, this expedient wheedling certainly will not fool God. And the last lines of the poem, where another writer might have exposed and corrected this deceit, compound his audacity. Restore thine image and I'll turn my face. First, Christ must do something and then Donne will. You purify me, you cleanse me, and then I'll look at you. And what I see will be your image in me. I will see myself. When the poem ends, Donne is still riding westward, thinking eastward, perhaps even contemplating the increasingly inescapable ordination that was the ruin and the making of him. The push-me-pull-you tensions that this extraordinary poem exhibits in no way diminish its achievement. For Donne, faith is a gravitational pull and an opportunity for intellectual exercise, now powerful and unanswerable, now half eclipsed by play. Above all, it is a matter of negotiation, a conversation in which he hopes, trusts, that his divine interlocutor will not be immune to his too human charm. Donne may be frail and imperfect, as we all are, and he may be heading for this day for many years in the wrong direction. But eventually, by God's grace, he will turn and be known.